Now for the lecture on, this is from chapter 18, this is the lecture on the operon, I call it controlling gene expression. Okay, let's begin. Metabolic intricacies, it's more than just genes and proteins. Okay, this, by the way, I just want to say something about this lecture. This lecture is super important. You know, you go through the year and certain lectures are more important than others. This lecture is really, really important because, as you will see, and it can be kind of complicated, but try to stay with it because I think you'll get a lot out of it if you stay awake and really track what I'm saying. First of all, fact number one, genes code for proteins. Fact, the process of copying DNA into messenger RNA is called what? Transcription, very good. Fact, the process of reading the genetic code in messenger RNA and producing proteins is called translation, very good. Question, how is this process controlled so that just the right amount of protein is produced, right? How does the cell know when to turn on a gene to express a particular protein, or when to turn off protein production? Yeah. Very good. It's with a feedback system. It's fantastic. And one possible answer is through the workings of the operon, which we're going to talk about today. But I will begin with the exact thing that Jack just mentioned, the idea of feedback. And so there's actually two ways of doing feedback. One way is when an end product of a metabolic pathway, down here, let's say tryptophan, is in great enough concentration, this is interesting, it will repress the expression of genes for all the enzymes needed for that pathway. So you can see in my picture here that there's tryptophan, and if you take the tryptophan, you'll see that it goes up and affects gene number 3. And it turns off gene number 3, so it can't produce enzyme number 3, so the metabolic pathway stops. Right, Michael? Great. Okay, and that's the operon. That's what we're going to talk about today. Now, also, you can take tryptophan and you can regulate enzyme activity by taking the end product, tryptophan, and when it gets in, you know, too great a concentration, it will inhibit, let's say, the first enzyme in the metabolic pathway. So it'll go down, it'll actually go and inhibit that enzyme. And we've learned about this earlier in the year. It's called non-competitive inhibition and allosteric regulation. And if you want to read about that, you can check out those chapters in the book to kind of remind yourself. We're not going to go over that. That's what we learned earlier. Today we're going to learn about a different way of doing it called the operon. So let's begin with what's called the TRIP operon. And everything I'm going to talk about today occurs in bacteria. And just remember that. Even though the operon works in humans, it's more complicated. We're not going to go into a human system. We're going to talk about what happens in bacteria, because the operon was first discovered in the 1950s in bacteria, and I'm kind of describing some of the early work that was done. The guys, of course, that discovered this won the Nobel Prize because this was huge, huge breakthrough in biology. So here's what happens. E. coli is able to synthesize tryptophan, which is, you know, one of the 20 amino acids, in a series of 5 steps. So if you look to the right, you'll see this original precursor molecule in the presence of enzyme 1 becomes a different molecule in the presence of enzyme 2, on and so forth until you get down to the very end, and enzyme 5 will change this last molecule into tryptophan. There you go. Okay? Now, like I said, each step is catalyzed by an enzyme. And each enzyme, as you can see, is coded by a different gene. Because enzymes are what? Proteins. And genes code for proteins. So all these five genes code for five different proteins, which are five different enzymes. What's interesting about this is that these five genes are all next to each other on the DNA. So look down here at the bottom, and you'll see, they call them trip E, trip D, trip C, trip, trip B, trip A. They're all located right next to each other, right down there on the DNA. Okay. And it turns out that because all five genes are next to each other on the DNA, they're all served by one promoter. You remember earlier in the year we talked about promoters. Anytime you have some genes on the DNA, they have to have a promoter. So this one promoter serves all five genes. That's very important. And remember that the promoter is the place where RNA polymerase binds. And RNA polymerase, what does RNA polymerase do? Can someone remind me, what does RNA polymerase do? Yeah. Right. It basically is the enzyme that makes messenger RNA from the DNA. Very good, yeah. Right. Yeah, if you remember remember I showed you that video that of how quickly transcription in real time works? It really goes pretty quickly. Yeah, exactly. Good point. Okay, so the reason for grouping all five genes into one, what we call transcriptional unit, is this allows for one on-off switch for all five genes. So in other words, because all five genes are functionally related, they all act in the same metabolic pathway, as you see here, to make tryptophan, then you just want to have one on-off switch. You don't want to have five switches. And so when E. coli needs to make tryptophan, it needs all five enzymes. You cluster them together, you have one switch, it's much more efficient. And the switch is this yellow area down here called the operator. And it's located between the promoter and the genes of, the code for the enzyme. And basically what the operator does is it controls access of the RNA polymerase to the genes. And I like to think of it like, a little, sometimes you go up to a gate and there's like there's a toll booth or something, and there's a gate that goes down or a gate that goes up. Think of the operator, either the gate's down or the gate's up. In this case, the gate's up, and the promoter can just, the RNA polymerase can just go on down and make messenger RNA. But there could be something in the operator that blocks that, as we'll see. So let's kind of just review this before we get into the details. The operon itself is made of three things. What are they? Yeah. Very good. The promoter, which is the place where the RNA polymerase binds. The operator, which acts as an on-off switch to control the transcription of the enzyme coding genes. And the genes of the operon, which these are the genes that code for a variety of enzymes, which are all linked together in some metabolic pathway. Exactly. You're gonna see that. Good. You're putting it all together. You're way ahead of me. There are many different kinds of operons. Whenever there's a series of genes that produce enzymes in a metabolic pathway, there's a possibility they may become part of an operon. Okay, it makes sense. So there's two types of operons I'm going to talk about today. One is called the repressible operon, and that's the example I'm working on right now called the tryptophan operon, trip operon for short. There's an inducible operon, and the example we're going to look at is called the lactose operon, also known as the lac operon. Okay, and I'll talk about each one of these in turn. So let's begin with the trip operon and talk about sort of the nitty-gritty details of how it works. It's really important that you really stay awake and listen carefully because, I know some of you are nodding off. It's a lot to take in today, but please hang in there because this is really important. So in the repressible operon, like the trip operon, by itself, this switch is always on. And that's the important thing to know about this. So that means the RNA polymerase can bind to the promoter, and it can just go ahead and transcribe the genes of the operon. Okay, it can make messenger RNA. So in a repressible operon, like this tryptophan operon, a protein called a repressor can bind to the operator, and when it does, this is the switch that switches it off, and transcription stops. Does that make sense to you? So there can be a little repressor that will bind into that operator, and it's like kind of like having the gate go down and say, no one can go by here. RNA polymerase can't go transcribe these genes. Now, what's interesting is that the repressor protein is coded somewhere else on the DNA. It's the place where it's coded is called the regulatory gene. And the interesting thing is this regulatory gene is continually producing the repressor protein. So it's continually being produced. And it can diffuse through the cell, and it will arrive at the operator. However, what's interesting is, why then isn't the trip operon always turned off? Why isn't the trip operon always turned off if the repressor is constantly being made? Yeah. Very good. You're on top of it. Yeah, if you actually look down here, if you look at my picture, which is really cool, the repressor is made in its inactive form. And you can see that it physically can't fit into the operator right now. So even though there's tons of repressor, it can't do any repressing. So that's kind of what I've said here in the next slide. The binding of the repressor protein is reversible and depends on concentration, so you need enough of it. But let's say you have enough of it. Well, it turns out that the repressor protein is an allosteric protein, and it has an inactive shape. And so what happens is the repressor protein, as you can see in my picture below, is synthesized in an inactive form. It can't fit into the operator. And what happens is it will change into its active form when tryptophan binds to it. It's at its allosteric site. So here it is, it's inactive. Here along comes tryptophan. When tryptophan binds to it, it changes the shape of the repressor. Now it's in its active shape. Now it can bind to the operator, and that's like putting the gate down at the toll booth, and RNA polymerase can no longer move along the DNA, and it can't make any messenger RNA. Yeah. Yeah, the operator is just a little piece of DNA. Oh no, it can bind. No, lots of things can bind to DNA. We're gonna look at that in more detail over the next few days. Yeah. Well, it's obviously, you're gonna have a bunch of inactive receptors. That's just the repressor, that's just the way it's gonna be. It's just the way the system's designed. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you'll see, let's kind of go through this and then we can talk about it. We call tryptophan, this is interesting, this is important. Tryptophan is called a co-repressor because it's a small molecule that cooperates with the repressor in order to switch the operon off. So The repressor can't work without the co-repressor. And the co-repressor is the end product of whatever metabolic pathway we're talking about, in this case, tryptophan. So in a repressible operon like this, the TRIP operon, the system is always switched on, okay? Therefore, tryptophan is always being produced. That's the way it works. And in fact, that is why it's called a repressible operon, because it's always switched on. The only way to control it is to switch it off, that is, to repress it. That's why we call it a repressible operon. So the name actually says what it does. How is it repressed? Here's how it works. When the level of tryptophan increases to a certain degree, it will bind to the repressor protein, as you see here. And when it binds to the repressor protein, it will cause it to take its active form. Now the repressor protein can bind to the operator, and when it does, it stops transcription of the genes, and therefore the production of tryptophan is curtailed. So it all makes sense. It's really a beautiful system. It works really, really well. Now, one thing I want you to know is that operons come in two flavors. We've just talked about flavor one, which is the repressible operon. But flavor two is just as important, and it works in a slightly different way. And the example of this that's called an inducible operon, and let's take a look at how it works. So the inducible operon is the opposite of the repressible operon, and so the operon is stimulated to switch on when exposed to a specific molecule that interacts with the regulatory protein. So it's just the reverse of the repressible. And the operon we're going to look at is called the lactose operon, otherwise known as the lac operon. And I believe, I'm not positive on this, but I believe historically this was the first operon that was discovered, the lac operon. So it's kind of the most famous operon. Here's how it works. I hope you remember from earlier in the course, lactose is a sugar that's found in milk, and it's a disaccharide. And we all know that disaccharides need to be digested. And the way you digest a disaccharide is you take the disaccharide and you chop it into two monosaccharides, right? Well, what's going to do that? What's going to cause the disaccharide to break into monosaccharide? An enzyme, right? In humans, what's the name of that enzyme? You guys should know this. What's the name of the enzyme in humans? What's that? Yeah, lactase. Anybody here lactose intolerant? We have a few lactose intolerant people. And so you are not able to produce lactase, which is the enzyme that breaks that. And so therefore you can't digest milk very easily because you don't have the enzyme to do it. And if you're an E. coli, which we're talking about here, they don't use lactase. They use a similar enzyme. It's called beta-galactosidase. Can everyone say that for me? Beta-galactosidase. So that's the enzyme that breaks down lactose into its monosaccharides. Okay, so here's how it happens. Let's walk through it. So first of all, beta-galactosidase, along with several other genes, it's not just one, there's three altogether, function in lactose metabolism, in other words, breaking down lactose. And they're found together in an operon. So you see in my picture down here, LAC-Z, LAC-Y, LAC-A. And those three genes will produce three different enzymes, beta-galactosidase, permease, and transacetylase. So there's three different enzymes that are produced. Now, they're all linked together in this, this larger structure, which is the lac operon. You've got a promoter here. That's where the RNA polymerase binds. You've got an operator, and then you've got, of course, the genes of the operon. So there's your thing, which we call the lac operon. Now, remember, there's a regulatory gene somewhere else in the genome. It doesn't need to be next to the LAC operon. It can be somewhere else, far away. And it produces a repressor protein. But what's different about this repressor is that it is created in its active form. And as you can see in my picture here, it's all ready to go. So it immediately diffuses and binds to the operator, which switches the LAC operon off. And this prevents transcription of the genes that are involved in the metabolism of lactose. So this inducible system is always off. Now, to switch the system on, you need an inducer. And an inducer, in this case, is allolactose. And as you can see in the picture, allolactose, which is a green sphere here, will allosterically bind to the repressor. It'll distort the shape of the repressor. Now the repressor can't bind to the operator, and now you can transcribe the genes into messenger RNA, and you can start producing the proteins to digest lactose. Now, just for your information, you might think, well, why isn't lactose the inducer? Well, it really is, because it turns out that lactose spontaneously isomerizes into allolactose. So when you see allolactose, just think lactose. It's really just a little chemical switch thing that happens. So whenever lactose is present, allolactose is present, and it will bind to the repressor, distorting it, and then therefore allowing the operon to be turned on. Okay? And so we call allolactose an inducer because it induces the system to produce the necessary enzymes to digest lactose. Now, let's do a little review, summary here. Gene expression is controlled by operons, which include three things, a promoter, an operator, and genes, and the genes they control. Gene regulation using operons can occur in two ways. Repressible operons, the example that we've done is the TRP operon in E. coli. The gene is normally expressed all the time. Proteins are constantly being produced. The gene needs to be repressed so that the protein production can be turned off. And the key idea here is that the gene is always on until told to do otherwise. It's common in anabolic pathways. These are ones in which raw materials synthesize an important end product. That's where you see repressible operons. And so what it does is it slows or stops the production of the end product when enough is made, and then therefore saves the cell energy in organic precursors, you know, because you don't need the, you know, you don't need to be making that anymore. Okay, the inducible operon, our example we talked about today is the LAC operon in E. coli, and it's the reverse. In the inducible operons, the gene is normally not expressed. In other words, proteins are not produced. So it needs to be induced to be turned on so that the protein production can begin. And the key idea here is that the gene is always off unless told to do otherwise. And it's very common in catabolic pathways. These are ones in which a nutrient is broken down into simpler molecules. So if you think about it, by producing enzymes when the nutrient is available, the cell avoids making proteins when they're not needed. So why should you be making the proteins to break down lactose when lactose isn't there? So that's why the LAC operon is so beautiful. When you drink milk, you literally turn on the DNA and say, okay, go ahead and start making the enzymes because I got lactose in my body now and it needs to be digested. But you only make it when you need it. So it's a brilliant system. Now, here's the key thing that might be a little confusing to you. It was confusing to me. Both repressible and inducible operons are example of negative control of genes. And so what I mean by this is in both cases, I want you to think about this, in both cases, the genes are switched off by the active form of the repressor protein, okay? It's easy to see this in the TRP operon. You know, we think about it. It's true in the lac operon as well. And the way to think about this is the allolactose induces enzyme synthesis not by acting directly on the genome, but by freeing the lac operon from the negative effect of the repressor. So it is more of a de-repressor of genes. So that's the way to think about it. It's a little confusing. Positive control of genes is different. It does exist when an activator molecule interacts directly with the genome to switch transcription on. And we're not going to talk about that today, but that's another way of doing gene regulation. This whole area of gene regulation that I talked about today is super hot area of research. I believe that we're going to learn a lot about how genes work and how genes work in all these different levels of living things by understanding gene regulation. And the very first steps occurred in the 1950s when the operon was discovered, the TRIP operon, the lac operon, the repressible inducible operons. There's way more that's been discovered about how to turn genes on and off and control how genes work, but we're not going to talk about that today. And it's really exciting, hot area of research right now. Okay, that's it.